Welcome back to Zillennials Podcast. Today on Zillennials, we are going to be talking about what grinds my gears, aka what annoys us.
Hopefully this doesn't come across as too whiny.
I think it'll be okay. I think also some of the things that like grind my gears are not going to grind your gears. I'm going to start off with my less serious of the two because I feel like otherwise if I go full throttle, like super serious right away, I think people might be like, and I'm not listening.
Quick question, and if anybody listened to the previous episode, they'll understand. Did you peek at mine? Because yours are a surprise for me.
I saw that you had two, but I didn't read them.
Okay.
I did not read them. I just saw that you had two because I was like, how many did Leanne write down? Because I only have like one. And then in our last episode, I came up with another one. And so then I was like, ooh, I'm adding this to my list. So I'm going to start with the one that's a continuation from last episode. So last episode, we were talking about nonfiction readers, and I was asking Leanne what her opinion is on nonfiction readers who are like, nonfiction is the highest form of literature, and fiction is trash. So my opinion on these people is I think that if you are talking about fiction and having it be like lesser than or like, oh, it's not even worth my time to read, I think you're just a pretentious snob, because I think that anyone who enjoys a TV show, a movie, it's essentially like reading a fiction book. I don't know. I think it's very snobbish to be like, I only like nonfiction. And if you don't, you are uncultured.
I agree with everything you said. To add on to that is I think people need to just stop shaming other people for what they read. Because it happens a lot of times, even within the fiction world, like say if you read a fluffier romance book or something, people are like, oh, I only read literary fiction. And I just feel like if people are reading, leave them alone and who cares?
Yeah, I look at it too and I'm like, I feel like this happens a lot. This is like a whole other discussion to be had. But I feel like this also happens a lot with things like romance books, where it's like, if you like reading romance books, people are like, oh my gosh, like, why do you like reading that? It has no literary value. And I think that that is erroneous because you still have to have character development and you still have to have an entertaining plot for your reader to remain engaged. But I think part of the reason why this happens is because I think, and this is going to get into something that I think some people might disagree with, but I think it's partially a societal attack on what women enjoy, because a lot of the literature we see as quote unquote like lesser than is literature that is primarily consumed by women. For example, like romance books, I see Ella and her tale right by there. Leanne looks so panicked. But I think like, a lot of the times for romance books and other literature that is primarily consumed by women, it's seen as quote unquote like less high literature. And I think that that's so sad. Like, why do we need to do that? Like, why are we shaming women for their hobbies? It's 2024.
Similar to what you're saying is, I'm sorry, when I'm not reading stuff specifically for the podcast, I don't keep track of where I read it. Google this. Probably New York Times is a safe bet for when I reference things, but there's a pattern of shaming women and girls for things that they like. This article was talking specifically about boy bands and how people are like, I think when we were in like middle school, high school, like people were really into One Direction. And a lot of people who were writing about One Direction's music were basically saying this isn't serious music. And how there's a trend of when girls or women get really into something, that the people who critique it, not everybody obviously, will have a tendency to put that down and say that it's not the highest version of whatever it is, whether it's music or art or books.
Like, I feel like this happens a lot too with shows like, say, for example, The Bachelor or like Love is Blind, where people will be like, this show is such trash, which like, on one hand, I'm like, it doesn't necessarily contribute anything to society. You're not wrong. But on the other hand, I'm also like, it's about the social relationships between people. And I think to be able to assess those social relationships between people is still a valuable skill. Like, you could argue that sports contribute nothing to society. What do they contribute? And you don't see men getting shamed for their love of sports. It's only women who get shamed for hobbies like this. So I think that that is something that really grinds my gears.
To your sports thing, coming from a person who was sick of seeing Taylor Swift at the football games, I feel like this trends with that too, with the way people were reacting to that.
Yeah.
Okay, what I don't understand is that they were saying Taylor Swift is making people watch football, But like, if I wasn't already watching football, I wouldn't sit through a 2-hour game just to see a 10-second, not even a 3-second clip of Taylor Swift. So I don't exactly understand how she contributes to increased viewership of football itself.
I think it's like the parasocial relationship with Taylor Swift, which if you want to learn about parasocial relationships, the podcast Dear Hollywood is, I feel like, a very good place to learn about that. It's by Allison Stoner, and she was like a star on Disney Channel when we were younger, and it talks all about childhood fame, and it talks about parasocial relationships and a whole bunch of other stuff. But I think it's partially because of parasocial relationships, because people feel like they have established some sort of bond with Taylor Swift, even though she's like a celebrity, and obviously she doesn't know who they are. But I think it's because of that implied bond that they have, or the bond that they think they might have. They're like, well, if Taylor Swift likes football, I should give it a chance and I should learn a little bit about football. So I think it's more so that parasocial relationship rather than like, I want to see Taylor Swift at the game. Although there might be people who are like that too.
That would make more sense, because I was trying to fit it in the box that people are watching the game to see her, but I was like, she's literally only on the screen for like 2 seconds.
Yeah. And then I think also with the whole Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce thing, I think that part of it as well is people are getting mad at Taylor Swift for like attending his games. And I'm like, she literally has done nothing wrong. What are you doing? Like, why are you upset with her for media outlets showing her at this game? Like, all she did was attend. Why are you so pressed? I don't get it.
I think part of it is, I don't know why they need to show her so much if she's just doing what everybody else is doing, which is going and seeing a game. I think that's why I get annoyed that every time something happens, they show her, because it's like, well, why don't you show the random dude in seat 47?
But I think that part of that, too, is like people need to make sure that they have their feelings placed at the right person, right? Because it's not Taylor Swift's fault. It's the media's fault. And I think that you recognize that. But I think that some people might not recognize that. But that was my first one of what grinds my gears. What do you have on your list?
Continuing the theme of referencing the quarter in review episode, I will start with, I hate when people say it's not that you don't have time, it's that you didn't make time. Because I think that goes into, I don't know if toxic productivity is a thing. I know toxic positivity is a thing, but I think it ties into that where it's like, no, it's really just your fault for not doing it. But I think that undervalues the positive impact that taking a break can have on somebody, and saying, oh, because you sat there and watched that 45-minute Netflix show and you didn't meal prep, that's why you're eating bad food for lunch.
I agree. And I think there are like, I think there's a time and place where it's like, yeah, you could have reallocated your time a little bit better. Like, let's say you spent like 3 hours watching TikToks at myself. but, you know, like, I do see your point where it's like, there needs to be a time in the day where you have a break. If you don't have a break, it's not healthy for you. And I think it increases your stress and your cortisol levels, where it's just not good for you.
I think you're right. Everybody does have that time where you really are just choosing not to do the thing that you should be doing. But I think specifically thinking of like balancing school, seeing friends and family, and I say as an introvert, that doesn't recharge me in the same way as if I was an extrovert. So I also have to add in time for me when I don't see anybody. With all those other things going on, sometimes I really don't have the time. If you're, say, you're supposed to sleep like 8 hours a day, you're at work for 8 hours a day.
Sometimes more.
Yeah, you're already up to, what, 16 hours taken?
Yeah, and I think, too, like, something that people don't take into account when they talk about, like, time in the day is they don't take into account the time that it takes to get prepared to do the things that you have to do for the day, which I think is super awful. For example, they're like, oh, if you have 8 hours a day at work, you've got 16 other hours to do something else. But you're like, no, you don't understand that I take an hour to get ready in the morning. It's a half hour to drive there, 45 minutes to drive back. So really, it's a lot less than that. And then you take out my 8 hours for sleep. And so where is all this time that you're talking about? Oh, and then there's like 2 hours to prep dinner and an hour to eat.
I also find it interesting that a lot of times the people telling you who do this, their full-time job is productivity management and coaching people on it. I feel like those people have a lot more control over their schedule versus people who have to go to an office for 8 hours a day. And like you said, you add commute time. Like, I feel like if I was working for myself from home, And even if you do go to the office, from the people that I know, the days they work from home, they have a lot more time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that a lot of the times people who say these sorts of things are like people who work for themselves, where they have flexible schedules, or like you say, productivity managers, where it's like, yes, to some extent, I can see your point, but also you have more flexibility in your day than I will ever have. And so it's what you are saying is like apples and oranges. It's two different things for how you're doing it versus how I can do that.
And the thing that it reminded me of was when you were talking about how kind of choosing between working out or doing your Spanish lessons, sometimes you really have to make the choice. And it's not that you didn't make the time for the Spanish lessons. It's that you don't have those hours in a day.
Exactly. So I think it's also like a prioritization. So when they're like, you didn't make the time, it's like, you're talking about my prioritization. There may have been things that were higher on that list than whatever it is that you're referencing.
I think it's like you said, is that there's almost like a silent judgment in that statement where it says it's that you didn't make time. Well, maybe like you said, you did something else that was good for you, like working out.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have.
I think that that's a really good one, though. And I think that when people talk about, well, you didn't make time, it kind of just sounds condescending a lot of the time. And so I feel like the only appropriate way to use this statement is like in regards to yourself occasionally. Not saying that you should use it all the time because we're not trying to promote that negative self-image. But like sometimes I can genuinely say like, I didn't make the time for this thing. And that was on me. Like it wasn't on anybody else. It was on me. But I don't think you should really use this to refer to other people a lot of the time.
No, definitely not. And I think for me, too, is each day you're going to have different standards. Like, for example, on a weekday, be a lot nicer to yourself. It's not that you didn't make the time. It's that you had other obligations. Whereas the weekends, if you have more time, I feel like at least for part of one of the days of the weekend, it could be your productivity time. It's all balance.
It is. So my other one that I have is weaponized incompetence, where somebody's like, I did not do this because I don't know how to do it. And I'm like, well, you know what? You will never learn if you don't learn how to do it. So not knowing how to do it is not an excuse. And I say this for like simple things, right? Like if you're like, I didn't clean the counters because I didn't know how to do it, or because you clean the counters better. I think there's a time and a place. But I think that for simple tasks, especially, it's like, if you don't know how to do it, you can just look up a YouTube video.
I get how that can be annoying. I think specifically hearing you do it better would annoy me more. Because maybe there are things that you just didn't do before, and it's easier for someone to be like, oh, I'll show you. Now, if they show you and you keep saying that, then that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But like, say for the first time, like, I don't know, how do you deep clean a dishwasher? Yes, you could look it up. But if there's someone in your house who knows how to do it, it might just be easier. Just don't keep asking like 6 months later.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things where it's like, you can ask like 1 to 3 times. After the third time, you should know how to do it, and you shouldn't keep asking. And so I think this comes into play a lot of the times when like people don't want to do something, and so they ask you to do it for them, or they ask you to show them how to do it. I think that's kind of where a lot of this comes from. And I think that this applies in like many different settings. Like I think it can apply in relationships, not always, but I think it can. I think it can even apply like in work settings, you know, if somebody's like, I don't want to do this, so I want you to show me again how to do this. And you're like, we've already done this like 5 times. Like, why are you having me show you again?
Yeah. And I feel like the tricky part that you have to determine on a case by case scenario is whether this is an honest request for help, because people learn things at different speeds, right? Or if it's what you said is they just don't want to do it. And I think it's also different to phrase it as like, I don't know if this works so much in the work setting, but like at home, if you're like, I'm really tired, I can't do this today, can you do this for me? Versus like, I don't know how to do this for me.
Yeah. I think that's kind of where it comes into play, is I definitely would prefer that somebody just says like, hey, I'm not feeling up to this today, can you do this today? And then it's more of an honest partnership. For work settings too, I think it also depends on like, how complex the task is. Like, I'm talking weaponized incompetence, like, it's a simple task. It should not be hard to do. But I think you'll come across this multiple times in your life. And one thing to think about is like, one, being patient with people, always. But I think there's also a point at which you have to say, like, I think that you're capable. Try this on your own. And if you need help or if you want me to, like, watch as you do it, that's okay. It's kind of like shoving the baby bird out of the nest.
That took a turn.
I think you're right. And I think also for me personally is, like, people can show me how to do it 100 times and I still won't know how to do it. I have to start clicking the things myself to really remember how to do it. And I feel like sometimes when you do that, especially for the first couple times, I like having the training wheels. I like having somebody who knows how to do it watch.
Yeah.
But then at a certain point, like you said, you gotta just fly, baby bird.
Yeah. And I think with everything, you take those steps where it's like you show them, you do it together, and then they do it themselves.
And I think, too, if they're doing themselves and, like, hit a roadblock,
they can ask.
Sure, ask. Like, I don't think it's, like, meant as a discouragement not to ask, but I think it's, I think the frustration comes, at least from my perspective, would come from you're not even trying.
Yeah, I think that's where, like, my frustration would come from, too, is, like, if you're not even trying to do something and you're just like, just do it for me.
Yeah.
So what else is on your list?
I don't know if mine's as serious as that. Mine is when people park crooked and they're clearly over the line and they don't fix it. And I think specifically if the parking lot's super full. But, like, my thing is, no, I don't always fix my parking when it's crooked, but I am always between the lines.
Yes, I think if people are, like, over the lines, ridiculous. What are you doing? You didn't have time to fix that? Like, that's a danger. One time, though, I do remember I saw somebody literally straddling 2 parking spaces, and I was like, how are you not going to get a ticket? It was so intentional.
I feel like that's even worse than, like, being crooked and, like, your back tire's over, because it's like that, like you said, that person didn't even try.
Yeah. I think also one thing to know, I don't know if you do this, but, like, if I'm close to the line but not quite over, sometimes I'll even tuck my mirror because I'm like, I don't want somebody to hit my mirror. So I feel like that is, like, the closest I would ever get to crossing the line is, like, and I'm close, so I'm just going to tuck my mirror because I don't have time to repark.
Yeah, but I feel like that's still taking a little bit of thought because I think you're in the right as long as you're within the lines. And, like, let's modify slightly. You're within the line and there's, like, enough rooms if someone parked there that they could, like, get in and out. One time I might have had to crawl over to the passenger side and get out that way.
I would not like that.
Well, there's some tight parking areas around here, and I saw a spot, and I wanted it, but then it was like, the other person was like, it's like that thing where one person was close to the line, so then the next person parked over, and it was like a domino effect, and I was like, well, I want this spot, so I just crawled out the other door.
This reminds me of, like, when we had beef with one of our neighbors, as in it wasn't truly beef, it was just kind of silly beef, but not. Our neighbor and us, we both have, like, difficult spots to park in our parking lot, and our neighbor was perpetually parking closer and closer and closer to the point where, like, you could knock it in the driver's side door, and he was like, you need to park even further over. And we were like, if we park any further over, because there were, like, beams on either side of both of our parking spots, I was like, if we park any further over, we will literally break our mirrors. We cannot park further over. I do not know what this person is talking about. And so they just kept parking closer and closer and closer to us until we left them a note. And we were like, hey, can you not park so close? Like, we couldn't even get in our driver's side door. And they left us a note that essentially said, I've been parking closer to you to encourage you to move further over. And I was like, you've been what?
Passive aggressive.
I know. And so it got to the point where we, like, told our landlord, we were like, hey, we're parking, like, there's not, like, an official line between the 2 parking spots, but we were parking over enough where it was, like, they had well over enough space. Like, well over enough space. Like, we had less space than they did, by far. And so we eventually just told our landlord, and we were like, hey, here are some pictures to show you, like, how close we've been parking to, like, this pillar, and this guy is perpetually parking closer to us and is, like, essentially giving us trouble about it and asking us to park further over, but we literally cannot. And so I think what our landlord did was we had, like, a guest parking spot, so we offered for the guy to move to the guest parking spot, and I think that's how it was resolved. But I was like, oh my gosh.
So who parks in his spot now?
That's our new guest parking spot.
Can I add a bonus one that's parking related since we're talking about parking?
Yeah, go for it.
People who have driveways that can fit multiple cars, but insist parking on the street directly behind your driveway.
Oh, yeah, that's tough. I don't like that. In addition, people who park over the sidewalk when there's plenty of room in their driveway?
Yeah.
I'm guessing yours is from personal experience?
How can you tell?
Just an inkling.
I think especially at Kyle's old apartment, it was the whole area was street parking only by permit. There was maybe one single family house on the whole street. So there's a minimum of 3 to 6 cars per building, or 2 to 6 cars per building. So it was always hard to get a spot. So whenever you'd pull up and there's a spot, you'd get really excited. And then I would be at my mom's where every house has a driveway and there's street parking without a permit. And people would put one of their 2 cars in the driveway and put the other car directly behind my mom's driveway.
I don't get it. Like, why would people do that? I think people are just kind of inconsiderate, especially when it comes to cars and parking and stuff like that. I feel like sometimes they're just inconsiderate or I don't know if it's that they don't realize the havoc it causes for other people or they're just not thinking about it. But either way, it's kind of inconsiderate.
I think with my mom's situation, part of it is because she does not own a car. So there's only a car there when I'm there. So I think people are like, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Is it like truly covering the end of her driveway or is it like just nearby the end of the driveway?
It covers the end of her driveway, but like the other side of the street. So when I try to back out, I have to go back and forth, like, especially when there's snow, I have to go back and forth a ton of times to get out so I don't hit them.
Honestly, if it was me, I would leave a note. And then if they don't respond, I would call parking enforcement. That's the city way to do it. Or if you're too scared to leave a note, just call parking enforcement. That's on them for blocking part of the driveway. I'm sorry, I'm very, like, lawless when it comes to parking now. Living here has made me more like that.
See, my MO is more rant about, although there was supposed to be a storm, and there was a car that was parked. If this is my mom's driveway, the car was literally, like, right there.
Mm.
And so with the snowbank, couldn't get out of the driveway.
Yeah.
And so my mom's like, I'm gonna talk to them if I see them. I'm like, I'm not saying anything. Because I feel like the all bark, no bite is kind of me. We're all complaining about it. And then I'm like, well, I'm not going to say anything. But then she did say something. She's like, so my daughter can't get in and out, especially with the snow. So can you like not park so close to the edge? And then the person was like, oh, okay. And then my mom tells me about that. I was like, you're just lucky that that person was a reasonable human being because that could have gone very differently.
Exactly. That's like, oh my gosh. So this is like turning into a parking episode.
But it's also called What Grinds My Gears. So I feel like it's fitting.
Everything parking grinds my gears is clearly what we're getting from this episode. At my old place, I remember a neighbor would sometimes park in my assigned parking spot. And like it happened like 2 or 3 times and I only lived there for like 2 years. And I remember because I didn't have my landlord's phone number and the lot is a tow lot. And so like if you're not in your correct spot, you could get towed. And so I was just like, what do I do? So I think I contacted my landlord or I think I like left a note on their car and parked in a different spot or something. I don't remember, but I just remember that I was like, I left a note on their car and I was like, hey, this is my spot. You've parked in my spot. And then the second time it happened, I was like, this is the second time this has happened. Please stop parking in my spot or else I will have to call the tow truck on you. Because otherwise, I don't want to risk my car getting towed for being in not the proper spot. Because like even when we had, let's say, for example, I was driving my mom's van to move in or something, I would have to call in the car so they would call it into the tow company so it wouldn't get towed. And so it seemed like it was pretty serious, you know, like it seemed like they would probably tow you. And I was like, I do not want to have my car towed because somebody else was parking in my spot.
Yeah, I get that. I'm very excited that the new apartment has a driveway.
Yes. I think that that is honestly one of the best things to have. If you are looking for a place to live, double check, make sure you've got a parking spot because it saves you a lot of stress.
I think at a place like my mom's, it wouldn't matter as much because there's on-street overnight parking without permit. But I think especially if you're in a permit parking area, it's usually because there's a high population. If you do not have a driveway, sometimes it can be a struggle bus, especially on street cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'd be like, move your car. And you're like, where? Because everybody has moved their car to the one side of the street and there's nowhere for you to go. It is kind of funny, though, because the morning of street cleaning, you would see the people who forgot to move their cars the night before. I called it the drive of shame, where you just see them driving in circles around the block trying to find a spot.
Ugh, that sounds awful. Okay, I don't know if you guys have this by you, but by us, if there's 2 inches or more of snow on the ground, you have to move your car. Like, there is no street parking. And I'm always like, where do the cars go? Because, like, where do you put your car? You're not supposed to have your car in the street. Like, you can get ticketed for it. And so I'm like, do you pay $16 to put it in a garage for 24 hours? Like, what do?
I guess it's cheaper than a ticket.
Yeah, but still, I'm like, it snows, or it used to snow here a lot.
Maybe this won't be a problem with global warming.
Maybe not.
Where we are, it's single side parking in snow emergencies. So it's not by inches. It's like when storms that don't come anymore used to come.
Yeah, ours is like, if it's snowing, all the cars should be gone.
Which, another thing, is that during these parking emergencies, these people who have driveways will still park one of their cars on the street, even though their driveways can park 2 or more cars. And I'm like, why would you want to deal with snowbanks and snowplows? Like, just park in your driveway. And my mom said, back when she was growing up, they had 2 or 3 cars, because at a certain point, like, the kids grew up. They had cars, the parent had cars. And they would just move them if someone had to get out before someone else. And I feel like people these days are just so against moving their cars for someone else to get out. And I mean someone in your own household, not like a random stranger. That's why people park on the street. And I'm like, is it that much of an inconvenience? Like, the people here, like, the driveway's divided in half. We each get half. And they do that with their cars. They'll just order them the night before based on who's going to leave first the next day.
Yeah, I look at it too. And I'm like, could you not just have somebody else drive your car? Thanks for joining us for What Grinds Our Gears. Our next book club is going to be Iron Flame by Rebecca Yarros, and that will be dropping on April 8th.
We'd love to hear what grinds your gears, if there are any car-specific or parking-specific ones or other ones. You can send us an email at selenaspodcast@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram @selenaspodcast. And don't forget to rate and review the show wherever you're listening.